The flu virus has hit historic highs in southeastern Australia this winter. People are dropping like flies as the virus caught authorities unawares, with a big increase in hospital admissions during July. Roderick Chambers asked Dr. Ian Mackay, Associate Professor of Virology at the University of Queensland, just why so many people were coming down with the flu this year.
We don't know exactly why, but we do know that the season started about a month earlier and it came off the back of quite a high baseline number of flu cases coming out of the end of last year and the beginning of this year. So things have been ticking away a little bit more energetically than in past years, and that may have had some role. It may be something to do with the virus. There might be something a little bit different about the flu viruses this year or one particular virus. We won't know a lot of that detail until the wash-up after the flu season. That's when a lot of that sort of research gets done.
There's more than one type of flu virus that we are getting at the moment, isn't there?
There are. So we usually get around two different types of flu B, which is happening this year, and at least two major types of flu A, and that can vary as well. It can be more than two, but those four types are what we try and develop our vaccines to protect against up to 6 months beforehand.
And I think that people that are younger are more susceptible to one and older to the other?
Generally, the older people are more susceptible to becoming hospitalised when they get the H3N2 subtype, and children more so by the type B. So in 2015, we had a big type B year in Australia. We saw a lot more childhood hospitalisations. At the moment, we're seeing a lot of kids and older people being infected, but the ones that end up in hospital are mostly the elderly, and those are the ones that are being infected more so with H3N2.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of people that seem to be off work at the moment. How do you tell if it's actually flu or it's just a bad cold?
So the only way to be sure that it's flu is to get a laboratory test. You can go to a doctor and they can actually do some rapid testing themselves these days, or the doctor might send your sample away to a hospital or to a private lab where they'll do some sensitive testing, and that'll tell not only that it is flu, which type of flu, and also which subtype of flu. And those data then get reported to each state's public health groups.
Is there a fundamentally different treatment for cold or flu?
Colds generally we just let run, so some painkillers and perhaps some antihistamines. But with the flu, there are antivirals available, but they're most useful if the flu is caught within 48 hours of actually starting to show signs and symptoms. Obviously, the best preventative is a vaccine. They start to become available earlier in the year, sort of April and May. So getting those vaccines, and it's still not too late to get those vaccines, but getting the vaccine is a good idea.
Yeah, and it's younger children, older people, they're the ones that are generally more at risk, yeah?
That's correct. Older people, people with already pre-existing conditions, and our Indigenous people's communities as well, all are able to get free vaccines if they fit within those categories funded by the National Immunisation Scheme.
But at the moment, people should still consider having a vaccine, do you think?
It is definitely not too late. It only takes about 10 days to become immune once you've been vaccinated, so it's well worth getting it. We're not past our peak yet, as far as we can tell, and there'll still be some virus spreading around for some weeks to come.
Dr. Ian Mackay, Associate Professor of Virology at the University of Queensland, ending that report by Roderick Chambers. The Chinese government has released new rules that are set to control overseas investments by Chinese companies. Off the back of the news, some pundits are forecasting potential repercussions for the Australian property market. But are they right? Philip Stempion has more.
China State Council has issued new guidelines on overseas investment by Chinese companies, including a list of banned, encouraged, and restricted areas for investment. In an effort to curb what they regard as irrational investments, things like casinos, defense technology, and assets that could potentially hurt China's national interest have been completely banned. Investments into overseas property developments, hotels, cinemas, entertainment, and sports clubs have been placed on the restricted list. Professor James Lawrenson is the Deputy Director of the Australia-China Relations Institute, and he says that he isn't surprised at all by this decision.
They really codify a series of statements we've seen from the Chinese government over the last few months. We know that the Chinese government was unhappy with a lot of the investment that was flowing out of China last year because it was into areas like football clubs, glamour, apartment buildings, these sorts of things. So the Chinese government has always had a concern that these really don't promote economic growth in or help growth in China. I think they were always a target for new capital controls.
Some media outlets have been quick to suggest that these new restrictions may cause a dent in the demand for Australian property. However, Professor Lawrenson disputes this and says that it isn't clear yet how much investment will be restricted and that there are other more powerful factors influencing the housing market.
And even if the Chinese government does clamp down on overseas investments in real estate, you know, we could see a pullback, but I don't think we're going to see anything dramatic. You look at Sydney prices over the last 5-10 years, they've basically been going up, up and up. Now, during that period of time, there's been ebbs and flows in Chinese investment. So I think that tells you enough to conclude that Sydney house prices are about a whole lot more things than Chinese investment.
Professor Erica Altman, who is an expert in real estate from the University of Tasmania, agrees. She says that the new changes won't mean that much for the Australian property market.
China is not Australia's biggest investor. So even though they are a substantial investor in terms of our property market, they are not our major one. So the overall effect on the economy may not be quite as dramatic as we think it's going to be just by looking at that one country.
Traditionally, Sydney homes were the most popular assets for Chinese investment. But due to skyrocketing house prices, investors turned to the property market in Victoria. Professor Altman says the Chinese investment in Australia is in a state of flux, especially in the property market. She thinks that investors are now beginning to turn their backs on the residential property developments and are instead focusing their investments in the commercial sector.
Seen a change anyway that's been occurring over the past 3 to 5 years, where hotels have not been high on the priority list or as high on the priority list from the Chinese investors, and most of their investment has been targeted towards healthcare facilities and also office facilities. So, you know, they're still building high rises, but they're more to do with commercial office complexes as opposed to hotels.
Professor Altman says that the new investment rules coming from the Chinese government have clear objectives.
I think that China has been very clear about wanting Chinese money to stay in China. And they really need that to bolster their own economy and try and settle things at home.
Professor Lawrenson says that China has learnt from the doomed Japanese property investment on the Gold Coast in the 1980s that saw Japanese banks lose big time.
One of the main reasons I think they're worried about financial stability in China, a lot of these purchases of, you know, football clubs and these apartment buildings overseas, cinema complexes overseas, were funded by debt, and they were funded by debt provided by the Chinese banking system. I'm thinking the Chinese government is looking at the wisdom of some of these investments, not at all confident that they'll generate a rate of return needed to pay back the loans, in which case the Chinese government and Chinese taxpayers will be left holding the bag. So that's the fear I think the government has. This is what happened to Japan in the 1980s. The Japanese companies were doing a very similar thing, particularly when it came to real estate. On the Gold Coast, I remember all these stories of Japanese companies paying through the roof for apartment buildings on the Gold Coast. Well, it turns out those prices didn't last. And so in the end, the Japanese companies sold and made a huge loss. Japanese banks were left holding the bag. So I think the Chinese government is looking to what happened to Japan before and doesn't want to repeat that same experience.
Professor James Lawrenson, Deputy Director of the Australian China Institute, ending that report by Philip Stempion.